Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike to tell you along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. And we started right off the bat, our exclusive quarterback-to-quarterback segment, Bobby Hebert, Drew Brees. Drew, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
No problem, guys. How you doing?
Doing great, Drew. Well, you had to be optimistic how the team ended the season. Look, we ended 6-11. We won 4 of the last 5. What does that tell you about this Saints team? And I always take the approach, looking back even in history, that I know you can carry that momentum into next season. Because I think the way your mind works, a human nature, boy, if you end on a positive note and you got some kind of momentum, that can transfer to the next season.
Yeah, look, I think there's plenty of psychological benefit to that. I think what we should be most proud of is the fact that, I thought we were the best team in the division down the stretch. You know, unfortunately, you know, it's the cumulative of, effect of, you know, all the wins and losses, you know, and unfortunately we just started off with not many wins. And so it made us kind of playing from behind, you know, that second half of the season. But nonetheless, you know, you beat Carolina twice, who is the division winner. You beat the Bucs down the stretch when, you know, they were playing for a lot. I think for those reasons, we should be really proud. I think everybody feels like, you know, Tyler Shuck has shown, you know, so much your growth and development just in that short amount of time. You know, he was already a pretty mature, you know, guy, but also the fact that, you know, you had a new offense and a new defense this year, scheme-wise. The second half of the season, I felt like for both sides of the ball, it just felt like everybody was really developing a comfort level with the scheme and what they were doing. I love seeing the year that Cam Jordan had, Demario Davis, you know, guys that obviously are at the, you know, towards the end of their careers and have played so long and yet are still so productive. You know, the year Chase Young had, you know, some of these young receivers, you know, really stepping up and having the opportunity to play after, you know, you trade Rashid Shaheed and the way Olave finished the season. I mean, so just the way that I think so many bright spots that just get you excited about what next year is going to look like.
Now, Drew, let's talk about Chuck. Looking at the quarterback, he's being praised around the league and here at home. Now, fans are saying, you know, that's our guy. He's the quarterback of the future. Then they say, well, Bobby, why we didn't start him sooner? Or we could have maybe been in the playoffs if that was the case. Now, that's all hindsight. How do you know when a quarterback is ready? And do you see wisdom in the timing of maybe making, you know, Tyler Shuck QB1 when it came about? Because I look at, okay, Pat Mahomes, look, the great Pat Mahomes, he didn't even play the first season.
Yeah.
Okay, you can go on and on examples, but just talk about that even when, from your expertise opinion, and when you came about, how do you know when a QB is ready?
Well, look, I'd say this, like, you know, Kellen Moore would be the only person who could answer this. But if Tyler Shuck was the best quarterback for the job at the start of the season, I don't know why he wouldn't have started. You know, so in other words, there, I'm assuming that Kellen Moore, that it was a fair competition during training camp and that Spencer Rattler started because Spencer Rattler won the job. And you're not just going to give the job to a guy. He's going to have to earn it. And so maybe he felt like, hey, Spencer Rattler gives us the best chance to win right now. But then at some point, you know, you reach a time in the season where it's like, hey, we need a spark or we need a change or, hey, Tyler's shown us enough now that, hey, he deserves an opportunity. And then he gets the opportunity. And obviously he grew in leaps and bounds, you know, just even after his first few starts. And it got better and better as the year went on. So I'm sure there was a reason for that. Look, it's hard for a guy just to step in straight from college and play. I can tell you, man, even just sitting and observing and watching and going through practice and running scout team and all those things, you develop. You develop, and it kind of avoids maybe some of the risk of, like, throwing a guy in the fire. You lose confidence, you know, that kind of thing. Look, hindsight's 20/20, you know? I mean, who knows what the season could look like had he started the year, but I'm sure that if he was ready to start the year or if Kellen felt like he was the best guy for the job, he would have started.
Well, Drew, I was at practice every day, you know, in OTAs, mini camp, training camp, And I can tell you, no, he did not beat out Spencer Rattler. Now, when Spencer Rattler struggled, he would move the ball, but we could never score in the red zone. You know, to get that far. But as far as to say, oh, no, Spencer Rattler should not have started the season, that was not the case. And I'm going back when they were practicing against the Rams, even in California, who's getting the job done. And I thought if Spencer Rattler wins, he'll continue to be the quarterback. And then if he doesn't win, then I could see I could see Tyler Shough getting an opportunity. I got Drake May on the brain because I'm thinking, okay, look at a great Drake May. He might be the MVP, or him or Matthew Stafford. And they went with Jacoby Brissett when he came on board with the Patriots. And I think it was like week six when they started with him. And look where they're at with him now. So, and even your case, you mentioned like Doug Flutie before, who's like a mentor to you. So it's to me, people don't realize everyone has the physical ability. You wouldn't even have an opportunity at this level. But how the whole confidence factor and having success and playing and your teammates trusting you to be that leader, I just think it was the right timing and that, hey, we need to move forward for next year for, you know, the winning the NFC South. And I think Kellen Moore, the whole organization, went about the right way with Chuck.
Yeah. I think that him having a chance to sit for the first half of the season probably was great for his development and just adding some fuel to the fire. You know, he knew that he was going to get an opportunity. He was preparing to be the starter every week. And then when he got his opportunity, he was ready and he was appreciative of it, you know, because he had waited his time.
Now, Drew, where do you think, like, I don't know, biggest gaps right now on this Saints team? If you put your GM hat on, what are the priorities in the draft? And then you look at a combination of the draft and free agency. I know right now I'd be shocked if Tyler Shough is not the long-term quarterback. Now, what does that mean? Obviously, what have you done for him lately? You're always going to be judged that way. But I look with you, and I know you would attest to this, that how important to have those interior guards to help Shough even play better. To step up in the pocket. It's good that you can run and get out and ad-lib and make plays, but I think at times that I definitely know we can get better on the offensive line, and we've tried to address that in the first round, but it just hasn't happened. Trevor Penning, you know, you look now, he's with the Chargers. He's been a liability. Cesar Ruiz, we paid him, but come on. To say now, if he was a fourth or fifth round pick, you'd say, okay, yeah, well, he's fighting, he's doing that. But just talk about what we need to address, like I said, maybe biggest gaps on the team to take that next step to win the NFC South. And I know, like, fans don't want to hear this, they want to hear some skilled player, and they don't hear we're jabbing another damn lineman. They would be like, okay, we've been there, done that. But I know how important that is, and whether you get a stud running back. You know, we pick at number eight. Bijan Robinson was the 8 overall pick. You look at Jeremiah Love coming out of Notre Dame. But I know I said a lot there, but just you break all that down.
Yeah. So obviously we've invested a ton of draft capital, especially like first round draft pack capital in O-line and tackles, right, the last 2 years. You talk about kind of filling out, you know, every part of the O-line. And the interior part of the line is so important. Especially for a guy like me who is a shorter quarterback, I think you think back to the Jari Evans and the Carl Nixes and those guys that just were so kind of big and powerful and just kind of solidified the interior of that pocket. Yes, certainly that's important. At the skill position, I know these young receivers kind of came on at the end of the year. I mean, certainly the opportunity to go out and get a really explosive receiver. Or just another playmaker is always something you're thinking about. The young running backs stepped up, you know, in Alvin Kamara's absence. I think you're always looking for depth on both sides of the line, you know, so it's D-line, it's pass rush, you know, it's stopping the run. That's first and foremost. I think some of these young DBs played really well this year, provided pressure, had some ball production, but still, you go get a top-flight corner, you go get another top-flight safety, you're always thinking about those positions.
You know, Drew, when I look at, because doesn't always happen, you go on a losing streak, do you lose the locker room? And Do you have the right leadership, whether it's players or coaches, or who's involved? I think definitely Kellen Moore hit a home run with Brandon Staley being the defensive coordinator. All of a sudden, we go from the 30th-ranked defense to number 9. You always want to be top 10. But what's your assessment of Kellen Moore after his first year? I mean, I'm looking at the team never quit. They fought to the end under serious adversity. When you think about it, and everybody in the locker room have nothing but praise from the rookies to the veterans about what Kellen Moore did. And how hard is it for a first-year head coach to gain that much respect and belief? You've been around enough football that just doesn't happen by accident.
No, it doesn't. And so I give Kellen a ton of credit. And like you said, look no further than the way that the guys in the locker room talk about him. And the same way they talk about Tyler Shuck, like look no further than just go and listen to the press conferences of either Mario Davis and some of these other guys when they talk about their coach and their quarterback, right? Very complimentary, like so much belief in the scheme and the way that they're operating the team. Look, both sides of the ball, you know, offense and defense, they were new systems, right? And that's not easy, especially when you got a bunch of young players to embrace a new system and get really comfortable with it. So I think the fact that they were playing so well, you know, towards the end of the season really says a lot about how they embraced it and what that could look like going into next year.
Drew, when do you know, I don't know, I guess if you still think you could do it and they're paying you whatever, you go out there and if you're confident in your ability, because it's pros versus pros, you look at Phillip Rivers. He comes from coaching high school and then a relationship he had with the Colts and that organization. He came back, and you look right here in our own backyard, Cam Jordan, DeMario Davis, Taysom Hill, some of the beloved veterans that Saints fans have come to love. And you look at Cam and Double D, already said they still have a lot left in the tank, and that's proven in what they produce. Look, the most tackles he ever had in a season, DeMario Davis. Cam Jordan, 10.5 sacks. So when you look at all that, do you think they're coming back, and maybe will it be in a Saints uniform? Will they? I don't know. That's a hard thing. It's, I want to be a Saint for life. But then, I don't know if I ever told you this story. I remember 1997, George Seifert wanted me to go with Steve Berline in Carolina, but my elbow was shot. And it was kind of like, oh, we're going to give you like $1 million to come play for Carolina. And I was like, I let my ego get in the way. I wasn't humble enough to say, like, well, even though I couldn't throw it like I wanted to, I knew where to go with the ball. But now in hindsight, I said, when you get in the real world, it kind of sucks. That extra million might have helped a little bit.
Yeah, that's, you know, compounding interest, you know? Had you invested that back in, what year was that?
That was 1997.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, that's, you know, almost 30 years ago. Golly, you know? You'd be living on an island somewhere.
Yeah, but you know, it's like, I want to go out on my own terms. I don't want them to run me out of town and stuff. But it was so here you got household names, Saints fans, Cam, Jordan, DeMario, and Taysom.
Yeah. Look, man, it's what every veteran player kind of battles, you know, is father time catching up with you. Look, there's no doubt, I mean, the season is long, right? And it's only getting longer, especially if they decide 18 games here at some point, right? Yeah. So it's just the ability to come back week after week and recover and be able to put that same level of, you know, kind of effort and performance on the field week after week. So only those guys know, you know, what that looks like. I mean, I'd say this of all those guys, like, DeMario Davis is the one who literally never leaves the field, right?
Right.
You know, Cam, obviously Cam, there's a rotation, you know, typically with the edge players, you know. Man, Cam still has a bunch of great life left in him as a pass rusher and as a guy who can still stop the run really well. You know, Taysom just does so much, right? But there's you know, Taysom could be out there playing whatever it is, 40 snaps a game out of the 65, you know, at various positions, doing whatever you need them to do. So, like, yeah, all those guys could absolutely still do it. It's just a matter of, you know, how much. And you're just having a realistic expectation, you know, like,
yeah,
it's not fair for anybody to put unrealistic expectations on them. And I think they need to be honest with themselves and with the organization as to, okay, here's what I can give you. Like, here's what I am capable of. All right, that works, man. That works for both sides. Let's go.
Now, Drew, what do you hope Saints fans take away from this season, the Who Dat Nation, about where their team is headed next? Because I think just talking in public, you're pumping gas. I always say this at the gas station, at the grocery store. And they go, oh Bobby, I'm real optimistic about next season. And so why not win the NFC South and what that might take and the big jump? Just look, what are the Patriots? They won 10 more games than they won the previous season. And the quarterback made a difference. So what do you think the Saints fans, they take away from this season heading into next?
Look, they should be so encouraged. The way I always looked at it is, you have to keep in mind that the other teams in the division are going to get better too. I think Carolina is only going to get better. They got a young quarterback who made some strides this year. They've got three really good receivers, two good running backs, a defense that the secondary is young and getting better. So it's, everybody else is going to get better too. But at the same time, I think you look where we're at right now and our ability to continue to add to our roster through the draft and free agency. And you got to feel good about where we are, especially down the stretch where, man, it stunk to lose to Atlanta. If we beat Atlanta in the last game of the season, you're sitting there going, hey, we won our last four divisional games in a row, two of them against the Panthers who won the division. One against the Bucs and one against the Falcons. You would feel good about that.
Yeah, that's what I look at. I thought they'd be, even before the season, I said, you could throw out their records. I go every year, I say, well, the team's going to be 3-3. It doesn't matter, how well we've played at Tampa, not necessarily, then have to be home field, home dome advantage, whatever. So I look at next year. No, it's hard to say you're going to go 6-0, but why not 4-2? And I'm 5-1. And now, Drew, and looking at where Sean Payton's at. Okay, here's Sean Payton, number one seed, has the Broncos, obviously looking like a Super Bowl contender. The only thing I got to check him is that when he said, and this is about quarterback Bo Nix, I want your impressions and how he's impressed you. But he said, yeah, I think Bo Nix is going to be is the next Drew Brees. I go, whoa, you got to slow your roll. Drew Brees is going to be our first ballot Hall of Famer. To me, you know why Bo Nix has a ways to go to be where you're at? He's not accurate enough at times throwing the football.
Yeah. He can run around a little better than me, though. No, I've been super impressed with Bo Nix. First off, I love the competitor, man. I can see the fire burning in him. I watch his mannerisms. I watch the way he interacts with his teammates. He gives it back to Coach Payton on the sidelines, I think he's got such a bright future ahead of him. And look, they just got a team that's built. I mean, that defense is really stout. Look, offensively, I think they have a bunch of solid receivers. I don't necessarily think they've got, any world beaters. I'm trying to be complimentary of them because I think that they, as a unit, they just work extremely well. They spread the ball around. Harvey, the running back, has really come on. He's kind of like this. He looks like Sproles out there half the time, So I think they've got a really good thing going. And I think Bo is the orchestrator of a lot of that, he's the guy who's got to take a lot of that brilliance of Sean Payton and then apply it to the play and making it right, So look, I think they've got as good a chance as anybody right now.
Yeah, Drew, I think it's wide open. You look AFC, NFC, I think the NFL might not like it, but I said as Saints fans, why not? Who hates the Jaguars? Why not cheer for Jacksonville? Small market team. You look where they're at. How well the Prince plays and how his hair is flowing could make a difference. And then I look Sam Darnold on the Seahawks. So I don't know. They might want the Bears or maybe the Rams or something. But I could see it's so wide open, like Seahawks, Jaguars, Super Bowl. You look at a Texans defense, how well does C.J. Stroud play? But who do you like in the playoffs?
Man, it's a great question, Bobby, because all those teams, it's the thing about the NFL that is different than basketball and baseball. It's not a seven-game series, right? So it's not that, hey, one game. And so the best team doesn't always win because, you know, it's one or two plays here and there that can affect the game. Like, you know, as good as New England's playing, Buffalo went and beat them 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago at their place,
yep.
Right? As good as Denver's playing, Jacksonville went and beat them at their place, right?
Right.
As good as the Rams have played at times, you know, like, you know, somebody surprised them. You know,
Carolina beat them.
That's what I'm saying. Carolina beats them, right? Like, I broadcasted the game, right? So I would say, man, I got to kind of trust some of the quarterbacks in the playoffs. You know, like, look, I think the Rams know how to win, right? Stafford, veteran guy, McVay. I think, like, they're going to be tough to beat, you know, even as a wild card. I mean, look, even like Philadelphia, right? Like, as weird.
Yeah, they're still the champions. Yeah.
Look, as weird a season as they've had, right? They're still, man, they're built for the playoffs, right?
Yeah, then you look at Josh Allen. No Pat Mahomes, no Burrow.
Yeah,
I mean, come
yeah.
on. Is he going to take advantage of that opportunity? So.
Yeah, I was just about to say the Bills with Josh Allen because I just really like the person and the player. So. Yeah.
Well, Drew, before we let you run, my neighbor Mac was asking me, you told me you were going to ask Drew this all season. What about Camp Champion? You got to ask Drew about his experience with Camp Champion. He's bringing up Daryl Royal and all. To tell me about that. I mean, I said, okay, Mac, I'm going to ask Drew about Camp Champion.
Man, that is a random question, man. That was like a summer camp I went through as a kid in Marble Falls, Texas on Lake LBJ. But yeah, man, a lot of great memories out there. It was like a sports camp, you know. It's where I fine tuned all my skills, Bobby. You know,
okay, a Camp Champion. Yeah, he must have went to Camp Champion because he's like constantly bragging on. Ask Drew about Camp Champion. So.
yeah, that's it.
Drew, thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate time and insights. And man, it's gonna be a crazy run to the finish because there is really no clear cut team that you can say they are cut above right now in the NFC or AFC.
Wide open.
All right, Drew.
Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
All righty. That was our exclusive here on WWL. Quarterback to quarterback, Bobby Hebert, along with Drew Brees, will be back with more sports talk right after this.
Mike, that's the longest thing we ever went without commercials.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, we believe in the power of everywhere. Listen to WWL anywhere, anytime. Get your WWL shows you love. If it's Dave Cohen, Tommy Tucker, Newell Scoot, the guys here at Sports Talk, plus the local content that you crave on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps. We are everywhere you are. Went a little long with Drew, so we'll go right back to break. We'll come back. Dean Kleinsmith, former trainer for the Saints and former Indiana Hoosier. We'll be back with Dean right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, and on our talk and text line, longtime trainer, Hall of Famer, Pro Football Hall of Famer, should say, Dean Kleinsmith, and Dino's also a proud graduate, Indiana. So how about them Hoosiers, Dino?
Well, Dean, I never heard you do the chant, Hoosiers. Come on, what, you were scared? I bet you're not scared now. Come on. Oh, we got Dean. I scared him off, I think.
I think you scared him off with the chant, Bobby.
I hope he didn't fall out.
Charlie will get him right back online.
Listen. When you're talking about Indiana, this is going way back when Dean was our trainer with the Saints, and he goes back to the late 60s, that when you talk about Indiana, what are you bragging about Indiana?
Bobby Knight basketball.
You never talk about their football team.
Never.
But look where they are now. Did you see the big check? Or I don't think they even gave the figure. You know,
Mark Cuban.
Yeah, that's where Mark Cuban went to school. Well, look what Name, Image, and Likeness of Mark Cuban just donated to them.
Dino, thanks for joining us, and Bobby wanted you to give the chant.
Yeah, come on, Dino. Come on, Dino. Come on. Hoosiers.
Bobby, listen, that chant came on long after I left Indiana University, but I am filled with Hoosier hysteria, I guarantee you. Probably a little too much of it. I was there on New Year's Day out in Pasadena, and it was really something to behold.
You know, and Dean, you look at your son, the great job he does NFL Network, and he's also
part of the Big Ten Network, Indiana.
So he's a Hoosier, and just tell the folks, the Hoosier Nation, a little background, how you ended up with the Saints, coming from IU. And just to enlighten them, because when you came from the Saints, that's where all of a sudden you sowed your oats, was at Indiana.
Well, that's exactly right. Indiana was the only school in the country in 1965 that offered a curriculum in sports medicine / athletic training. So that's what I told my dad, and he said, well, if that's what you want to do, that's where you better go. So growing up in Minnesota, I had to make the trek to Indiana, and that turned out to be a turning point in my life. Went ahead and spent 4 years there as an undergraduate. Went to the Rose Bowl as a head student trainer, 1968, and then haven't been back until last week. So it's been a long ride. Got the experience at Indiana. To work for the Saints the day after I graduated. I drove from Bloomington, Indiana to New Orleans, went to work for the Saints the next day. Spent the next 31 years with the Saints, working under 13 head coaches in 31 years.
Well, Dean, when you think about that and, right place, right time, you always took advantage of that opportunity. And how sentimental was it? Did you get a little emotional, or maybe you pass that you go, whoa.
No, it's
a cycle.
I know he got wet because it rained.
No, because all of a sudden he goes, whoa. And you reflect back, man, anything over half a century, I was in the Rose Bowl late 60s, and here I am, I'm back here representing my university. And I think Indiana ain't going nowhere. They're going to be in the hunt. You see that?
Yes,
they're probably going to be asking you for money, Dean. Look at them, Mark Cuban with the Name, Image, and Likeness.
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned that, Bobby, because as I was leaving the parking lot, the tailgate party, I was just walking with my daughter-in-law and my two grandsons to go into the stadium. And coincidentally, and absolutely coincidentally, I'm standing next to Mark Cuban. He's there. Oh. He's solo. No security crew, no entourage. No bodyguards. He's standing there in a black T-shirt. So we had a nice chat while we waited to go through security to get into the stadium. And it was just unbelievable. And it made my day even more special. But let me tell you about, you're going to ask me about Coach Cignetti, I hope.
That's what I was going to ask you, Dean. Go ahead.
Mike, let me tell you. This guy has brought a blueprint, for success from the other stops that he's had along the way. I mean, he's 60, mid-60s right now.
He's like 64. Yep.
And he's been to IUP, he's been to Elon, he's been to James Madison University. But he's had this convicted belief in his plan. Now, I already told you I worked for 13 coaches for the Saints. They all got a plan, but this guy has got a true blueprint, and his prior successes prior to being hired at Indiana really generated the buy-in to Indiana University, the football players, the athletic department, and the fans. It was unbelievable. He does three things I think better than. And again, and Bobby, you've seen a lot. You've played for a lot of coaches.
Yeah.
And Mike, you've interviewed a lot of coaches. But Coach Cignetti is elite, I think, in about three things that he does. Evaluation of talent. He knows the exact characteristics that each player needs that they need to win. He's got each guy's characteristics planned out. The second thing, development. He develops players. His players get better not just year to year from the time they come on board, but they get better week to week. And we've seen that for the last two seasons, how they just get a little better and better and better. And that's part of his development plan. I think the third thing that he's elite at is messaging, you know, and everything that he says is purposeful. You've even when he was introduced to the IU fans the day he got hired in Assembly Hall, 17,000 Indiana Screaming basketball fans are there. They introduce him at halftime. And that's when he says the Purdue sucks. You know, that's bravado for a guy coming in for the first time setting foot on campus, and he's starting to beat up on the up the street neighbor, Purdue. So he knew that he needed to generate enthusiasm for IU football, and that's when it started, right there from day one. And then I think as far as his messaging, sometimes he talks to his team through you guys, through the media. And that happened last week at the Rose Bowl. And he goes in a post-practice interview, and he says, you know, we're not very sharp. We're not practicing very sharp. So don't you know that the players hear that, and they then need to refocus and to find their edge for the next day of practice. So he's got, I think, three things. There's, you know, the evaluation of talent, the development that he does, and the messaging that he sends just kind of makes this guy kind of elite, a little different bird, if you wouldn't say. And then I think the last thing, guys, is his assistant coaches, his coaching staff consistency. His coordinators, his two offensive and defensive coordinator and special teams guy have been with him for 10 years plus each. And, you know, that's hard. That's hard for
a lot of loyalty.
Yeah. Staff together like that. Yeah. Like that. And it works. It really works. So, but man, it was a great 48 hours in paradise for me in Pasadena.
Well, Dean, are you a little nervous? I don't know. You know, you're the cliche, hard to beat a team twice, like two, three times, whatever. And then, but you go in hostile territory and you beat Oregon.
No, they beat them up.
Yeah,
in Oregon.
Exactly.
Not beat them, beat them
exactly.
up.
Exactly. But, Dino, are you a little nervous or what?
Yes, I'm absolutely. You know, we've been down for over 60 years. You know, it's hard to be overconfident. You know, I don't think that. You know, that's not something. I have to tell you, I flew back from LAX to New Orleans on January 2nd on nonstop, and boy, don't you know, there were only like three of us that had IU stuff on. The rest of the plane was packed with angry Roll Tide people. I mean, it was, and I walked down the aisle. I had a bright white sweater, IU sweater on with a big red IU on it. I got a lot of dirty looks, man.
Dino. Alabama got humbled.
Did they get humbled, and they got beat kind of like they used to beat up people.
Without a doubt.
In the trenches up front. Dino, let's make this deal. Next week, you're still surviving. You come on with us and talk Indiana Hoosier.
Yeah, good luck. It'd be good luck, Charm.
How about that?
Absolutely, man. I hope so, guys. And you count on it. I plan on talking to you next week.
All righty. Thank you, Dean.
All right,
Dean Klein-Smith. Last year was honored by the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
No, he's one of the greatest trainers in NFL history. NFL history. He's been with Steve Spurrier and the old Redskins even, the Detroit Lions when Detroit sucked. No, he's been all over, been there, done that. And you know what? Dino, I want to say, Dean, he's young 70s. He drank from the fountain of youth. Dean does not look his age.
No, he doesn't.
Dean looks like he'd be like in his late 50s or something right now. No.
And over 25 years with the Senior Bowl.
Yes.
And every year, Manning Passing Academy, we get to talk to Dean.
Man, he was like a big wig, like the Gatorade people would listen to him. Like, who did he like sponsor a different camp? On the offseason.
We'll be back to finish it off here in our number one right after this break. Finishing up here in our number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Want to thank Drew Brees along with Dean Klein-Smith for joining us. Great first hour. When we come back, we'll have on with us Ernest Harvey Turk from Camp Moolah and also Wilson Alexander for covering the LSU Tigers right after this news break.